Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
Welcome back, culture members. This is episode 8 of The Culture's Money. I am Jamal Vito. Some of you may know me on other social media platforms as Leo Graham Prince, but whatever platform you know me on, I hope you know me to be an advocate for financial wealth, financial literacy, and financial freedom. I'm happy about this episode particularly. This is different than the other episodes and guests that I've had so far. This is going to be my fourth guest, my fourth lady in a row. Fellas, they doing y'all out. Like, I want y'all to get y'all schedules together, but they are definitely holding it down for the culture. This one is going to be especially good because it has some very good tidbits and different angles and all that. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Miss Nadeja to the show.
Hello.
Thank you for, I always like to start by thanking the guests because I'm always honored that you guys think it's not robbery to give me even an hour of your time. I know people are busy and they have other things going on, so I always appreciate that.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
No problem. So we generally start, tell the listeners about yourself.
So my name is Nadeja Towns. I am a career transition coach and exit strategist. I recently left my 9-to-5 job as a student affairs professional, and I am on a new chapter, just really full-time entrepreneurship. But it took me a lot of steps to get to this point. So I don't even know where you specifically want to begin.
I think the $20,000 in debt and how you, you know, tackled that and the disciplines and the methods you use are essential because was it student loan debt or personal debt?
It was student loan debt.
Oh, that's even better. Yes. Considering the $1.5 trillion in student loan debt. So let's start there.
Okay.
What happened, you know, take us through, you know, the initial steps of, you know, when did you come to the realization that, okay, I have to tackle this and these are my methods and plans?
Okay, yeah. So I actually, I have a bachelor's and a master's. And for my bachelor's degree, I went to Gettysburg College and I got a full ride. So when I graduated with my bachelor's in sociology, I only had $6,000 in debt, which I accrued from expenses to go for a study abroad trip. But I pursued my master's at Rutgers University. I got a master's of education in college student affairs, and somehow $6,000 of debt turned into $20,000 in debt. Now, let me say that I was never a student who really just balled out on refund checks. I never was a person who took loan money and used it for things that weren't necessities. So this was just really life expenses that added up over 2 years. And so once I graduated, I got my first full-time job working at the University of Maryland and their Department of Resident Life. And if you're not familiar with Residence Life or Student Affairs, it's a job that requires you to live on campus in a building with your students. And so you don't pay rent and you don't have to pay for like electricity and things like that. So it's a good way to save money. And I knew originally that I wanted to knock out my debt in 2 years, 3 years maximum, because $20,000 is significantly lower than most of my peers. Significantly. I know a lot of people that are in six-figure debt. But for me...
Yeah, I think the yearly average, I think the average the last time I checked was about $36,000 was the average.
Yeah, so I was just like a few... you know, beneath that. And I was like, you know, I might as well knock this out. So for me, I'm a first generation college student. So it was financially, you know, meeting my needs as an undergraduate student and as a grad student. But I figured, you know, I went through school the straight 6 years. And I was like, if I could live like a broke college student for 6 years, a seventh year won't hurt. And so instead of, you know, most people after you graduate, you're really excited to make like, you know, your adult coins and have some real money. I actually really just sat down, put myself on a budget, and made a plan to pay off that $20,000 in 1 year. So that was like paying a mortgage. I was literally paying $1,400 a month on my student loans. And at first, it was just so gut-wrenching. But when I started to see that debt number go down, it felt so good. And I think the piece that kept me motivated throughout that debt-free journey was just, instead of seeing those payments as a sacrifice or a compromise, really looking at it like a priority, and realizing that I wasn't missing out on anything, because a lot of my peers had debt that was bigger than mine. I just chose to prioritize more mine in a more urgent manner. And so once I started paying off those loans and I'm paying this mortgage every month, I'm like, okay, the debt's going down. But I wanted to pay it off quicker because I'm a little bit of an overachiever. I was like, this is not moving fast enough for me. I want to knock off a few more of these racks. And so that's actually when I first had the idea to start a business, because I refused to get a second job having a master's degree. Definitely pride and ego speaking there. I don't, you know, judge anyone who does, but I just felt like there has to be another way for me to make money. I have two whole degrees. I have to figure this out. So I started writing resumes in June of 2018, and that actually allowed me to pay off that student loan debt in 10 months instead of 12. So
let me ask you a question really quick. I know you you said it was $6,000 and then it got to $20,000. Mm-hmm. Just so I want to get to the specifics for the listeners. The interest is what made it $20,000, correct?
So it definitely, about $5,000 of that was probably interest for sure. Because even to this day, I'm like, how did I get to $20,000? Like, I try to backtrack and think of what I spent this money on. You know, there were a few dental costs and just lively expenses, but I would say a quarter of that was the interest for sure.
Yeah, and I always make it a point to point out that it's great that you had some grants and got a full ride, and majority of that debt didn't come on you. But I don't think people take into the magnitude that $20,000 can turn into $45,000
very
quickly, if not taxed.
Yes,
like the interest on these federal or unsecured loans is astronomical. Mm-hmm. And the more you defer or put in forbearance, it just compounds, kind of like the stock market. And I always tell people compounding interest is powerful. Mm-hmm. If you don't think it's powerful in the stock market, just look at your student loan debt. You'll see the power of compounding
interest. Yeah, they tax you real quick.
Okay, so you started the resume business so you can tackle the student loan debt in 10 months. Did you have previous experience, or was this something you just kind of jumped into and did some research?
Yeah, not any business experience. I literally winged my first business, but in terms of working with resumes, I helped some of my peers when I was in grad school. I've always been a really strong writer. I love to write. I used to work at a writing center when I was in undergrad for 3 years. And so I kind of took what I knew and found a way to really use it to help other people flourish in their careers too. And so
that's so key. I want to stop at that part, because sometimes I think in college, people always, you know, if you're kind of like I did, or other people who went a little bit in your 20s and you had to work, most of the time you work jobs that you hate.
Yes.
Like you could not stand them. And I always tell people that, yeah, I couldn't stand the job, but each one of those gave me a skill. Mm-hmm. Like high tolerance. I work in the financial industry now. And one of the questions that I got a lot of in the beginning was, how do you handle high stress mm-hmm. situations? And once they started looking at my resume, I worked for DOC, which is the Division of Corrections, and TSA, you know, those annoying people out at the airport telling you to take off your shoes. I stopped getting asked that question, because they were like, if you can work in a prison system with murderers, I'm pretty sure you can handle a high stress situation.
Yes.
And I always tell people that don't overlook the grit and the grind of some of these marginal jobs, because that's really what the blessing
mm-hmm.
is. So, and all it says I would like to say is that 3 years you spent at the writing center was probably essential to you building the resume.
Yes,
skills,
absolutely.
Right?
Some students came in there with resume stuff, but most of it was just people not really knowing how to articulate their ideas. And so that's not very different from helping professionals articulate their experiences and skills. I think a lot of people assume that if you want to start a business or have a side hustle, you have to get some sort of certification or go back to school and do all these other things. But that's not always the case. I think we all have, skills and talents. But unfortunately, it takes a while for some of us to even know we have them, let alone tap into them.
Do you think that's because of fear, hesitation? Has it been beaten and has the whole certifications and you need to get all this, has that been beaten into their psychology, specifically our people? You know, they always try to move the goalposts to make it harder for us to reach things where, you know, people of other cultures, they get to the same, you know, levels with sometimes less education than
us.
Yeah,
I definitely think for some of us that's part of it, but at the core, I think is that we just aren't exposed to enough at a younger age. And I have this conversation with my family all the time. If you do not know that you have the option to do something, whether it's a hobby or for a career, you're not really going to think about it as something that you can monetize.
Okay. So when you started building a resume company, how did you start building the following? Was it word of mouth? Were you running promos? Like, take us to the entrepreneurial thinking of, you know, how do you start building traction?
Yeah, so I actually, again, I completely winged my first business. My second business anniversary just passed, and I am just shocked that I even am still here with how much I winged my first business. But fortunately for me, I have really good colleagues and friends that just are very supportive of the work that I do. I've always been a kind of a mentor person. And so a lot of my peers look to me for inspiration, whether it's talking to me about what they want to do or just passively watching me on social media. I really went into Canva, created a graphic, and I posted it on Facebook and Instagram. And more than 40 people shared it that same day, which was really a good feeling for me because most people who you know directly are not eager to promote your business for you. That's a whole nother conversation, but it's hard to get people to support you even in a way that doesn't cost. And so a lot of it was word of mouth. I was super grateful for the first few people who gave me a shot as a newbie. I still remember my very first client. And from there, I built my platform mostly on Instagram. And so I used to have just a personal Instagram account, but over the past two years, I've really put my focus on the business account so that I could monetize my platform.
You said something there. I want to get your opinion about it. And I always tell people this, you know, clients when I consult with them, that your family and friends support is nice, but 9 times out of 10 in tech, they have this 3 segments where it's like the first adapters, then they have like the medium adapters, and then they have what they call laggers, those that are always last to transition over to a new technology, a new design, mm-hmm. and all that. And I always feel like families and friends are the laggers. For some reason, they are the laggers. They're always the last ones to adapt to your business, your skill set, whatever you're trying to achieve. So don't bank on them being what shoots you up, because if they come early, that's great, but you got to kind of learn to work around that. Would you agree that they shouldn't be your primary focus? If they come, it's good, but they really shouldn't be the focus.
Absolutely.
In the beginning.
I think that especially for us, there is this, I call it brainwash. I think most of, not just our people in general are brainwashed to the 9 to 5. And so as a woman of color, if I was not brought up around a lot of entrepreneurs or entrepreneurial spirits, then if I see a friend or a family member who starts a business, I'm like, oh yeah, that's great. Like, I don't even think about the success that they can have. I don't take it very seriously, right? Especially if they're in the beginning phases. It's kind of something that you brush off. If you think about it, and I've seen this meme on social media so many times, people will congratulate you so quickly if you get a new job. But if you tell them that you started a new business, they kind of pass by your post and they don't really acknowledge
it. Oh,
wow. And so I think that for the upcoming entrepreneurs, yes, you should be focusing on your ideal client and audience, because your family and friends most likely are going to get behind you once they see you growing and flourishing. People are just much more willing to support you once they see that you are credible and that you actually can make an impact. But before you can get all these people who aren't putting money into your pockets, you really need to focus on really reaching the person who you are trying to work with ideally.
And what I find strange is a little bit, and I've been trying to tackle this on social media, people are kind of resentful for their families and friends when they don't support them and they make it. And I tackle that in a way, it's like, one, your business should never be more important than your family. We can never destroy the family dynamic. It's already broken enough in the culture. Business and money should never be a primary focus to break that bond. I think you got to kind of take the personal out of it. You're treating them, you're in a business and you're treating your family as if it's a personal thing when it really shouldn't.
Yeah, they just have a completely different mindset, right? Like, you're the entrepreneur. You are so inspired by other entrepreneurs. You're motivated to, you know, create some generational wealth. You're trailblazing. But most of your family and friends around you are not going to understand that. That's why when you start a business, you really have to build a network and connect with like-minded people. Because if you rely on your family and friends who don't understand entrepreneurship or financial freedom, their lack of energy or support will easily make you second guess yourself and doubt your goals in your business.
Okay. So you built the following, you know, the clients are coming in. Side note, for the listeners, I was actually one of her clients. So this is unique because actually I think I've had a couple of young ladies on here, a couple of hairstylists, an author, who's a book I brought, and a tech, a black woman in tech. But yours is the only one that I've directly bought the product. And to give it, to plug the talents, I actually got the job based off the
So I've been journaling. This is so funny that you brought this up because I've been committed to journaling every day in June. And right before we got on for this recording, I was like, today I'm doing a podcast recording with like one of my former resume clients. And you were actually the first client that reached out to me with, most of them reach out with feedback, but told me like, hey, I got a 5-figure salary increase using the resume that you brought me. And I promise you, once you gave me that feedback, I literally increased my prices. I was like, if I'm out here getting people jobs that are paying them 5 figures more than what they were paid before, thank you for affirming my worth. That really opened my eyes to really seeing the impact that I can have for my clients. And, you know, most people aren't willing to invest in themselves, whether it's their career or any type of personal or professional development. But, you know, for me, that helped me put into perspective and yourself, the money that you're investing in a service or whatever it is, it's going to come back 10 times fold if you really use it. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. And I wanted to let you, I had done my resumes for years and everything while I was working for college and all that, but I wanted to transition to something bigger. Like I told you, in the finance industry, and it was like, okay, Jamal, just let someone else do it. They probably have the time, the focus and knowledge and everything like that. And your resume put me in the position to, I always tell my friends and family members, when someone offers you a salary, negotiate. HR's key job is to get you in at the lowest price possible. That salary that they posted, I guarantee you, it's starting.
Sure is.
And if you can get in, I said you can push it. People are like, no, I don't want to lose the job. They already liked you. Trust and believe. They're not gonna rescind the offer because you want more money. They'll meet you in the middle. I always tell like people, ask for more than what you want so you can get to closer to what you want in the process. When did the business become so big that you knew you had to start preparing to transition from 9 to 5 to just sole entrepreneur?
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of people make assumptions about entrepreneurs when they go full time. And so I'm going to take advantage of this opportunity to be completely transparent about my transformation from my 9 to 5 and like, what the heck is Nadeja actually doing right now? So a lot of people probably assume that I've just, you know, made so much money in my business that I'm like, I don't need my full-time job anymore. The reality is that I had an experience at work in August of 2019 that really was the final straw for me in student affairs, working in higher education. And I'm a person who, once I make up my mind about something, there's really no going back. And so at that very moment, I started planning my exit strategy to leave my 9-to-5 job. And so for me, there's two different pivots that happen. There's a pivot in my career that happened, and then there's a pivot in my business. for me pivoting in my career, it was time for me to leave when I knew that my mental health just could not handle the work anymore. My job comes with constantly working with very privileged students, being on call. I don't know if anyone's listening has ever been on call, but getting calls at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning is never fun.
You're stop. They do not call you that time. What is that? Yeah. What are the student affairs that they call
students
you?
Students are typically being transported for mostly alcohol, sometimes mental health, but it's a shared responsibility among the professional staff. And so it's a rotation. So you're not necessarily on call every day, but there are several times throughout the semester where you're expected to have a duty phone. And if anyone calls you, no matter what time it is, you have to wake up and support that student through crisis or emergency. I couldn't handle that anymore. On top of a specific incident with a student staff member that just really left a bad taste in my mouth. So I knew I needed to leave. And so I started saving again. And that was me paying off that student loan debt. That $20,000 was really important to me being able to leave my job now, because I had so much financial discipline that I was able to really reevaluate my finances and figure out, okay, how much do I need to save to feel comfortable leaving this job? Because for me as a career coach, I obviously don't want to jump into any other job. I want to take my time and do something that is going to be fulfilling for me. So I was like, how much money do I need to save to not need to leave for like a couple of months? And that's basically what I did, is I saved from August until my very last day, which was actually last Monday, so that I can focus on my business full time. Now, the pivot that I have in my business, I stopped writing resumes actually and transitioned into full-time career coaching, and because I just really needed to have a different impact and connect on a deeper one-on-one level with my clients. And so as a career coach, what I do now is help other student affairs professionals exit higher education the same way that I just did. So lots of transition, but mental health is key. And being brown in higher education is exhausting. So I had to plan my seat escape.
So I hear you. You sound like you have a lot of financial discipline, mm-hmm. which is awesome. Where did you get that? I know you said you were a first generation college student and all that, but I've heard a lot of people have gotten financial discipline from parents or relatives who mm-hmm. didn't necessarily go to college. So is that yours from that?
I would say that, you know, coming up and not having just a bunch of money to just blow around plays a part in it, right? So I'm used to making things a little bit of what I have. And something that I take a lot of pride in is that my mother really raised me not to worry about money. So when it comes to finances, that's one of those things that I can't truly get stressed about. You know, something might come up and it might frustrate me for a second, but it's not something that I really dwell on. So for me, I don't really attach too many of my emotions to money. And so when it came time to pay off those students.
Oh, that's key.
Yes,
you
don't,
got to say that for them. Yeah.
I do not attach too many feelings to my money.
And I only want you to drive that home, because I live in I live because I'm passionate about what I do. I live in an industry where people, our people especially, and I see this all the time, they emotionally mm-hmm. buy. I'm depressed, so yes. I have to spend this. I'm sad, so I need this. And I tell them that is a lack of discipline. If your coping mechanism is to spend money, especially money you don't have.
Talk about it.
I have problems with that. Like, I have problems with that because so much of the Black wealth mm-hmm. escapes the community. And that's because, honestly, we're reckless and irresponsible with our money. So I just wanted to drive that notion.
Yeah, well,
home,
I also think that FOMO is a piece of it, too, that fear of missing out. So when I sat down and did my budget to pay off my loans, there were obviously going to be a lot more things that I couldn't do anymore because I was, you know, limiting what money I was spending. And so when you think about, you know, networking and being around your colleagues and, you know, going to lunch every day. No, Nadeja, we're not going to lunch every day. I created a budget for that month, me going out in general, and maybe once or twice in that month, I would go to lunch with a colleague that I really wanted to connect with. And if I wanted to do a little happy hour, you know, I would plan one or two of those, but not just spending money in the spirit of the moment, because when you get back home and look at your bank account, you realize that you don't really have everything under control.
That is essentially key. So it sounds like you got that from mom, and God bless mom. Mothers and praying grandmas.
Nowhere. What would we be without nowhere.
Nowhere. So I would assume that, you know, now that the debt's gone and all that, you've probably started transitioning to the wealth building of, like, you know, buying a house, getting, you know, 401ks and investing. Like, do you attach the same discipline to that?
These are things that recently I had to revisit because my life has changed, right? So I'm not working a 9-to-5 anymore. And I actually just moved out of that apartment that was provided for me because of my job. And so literally, I would say a week ago, I came up with this new goal. And I'm like, I want to be financially prepared to put down for a house by the time I'm 30. I'm 27 right now. And my birthday is in a few months. And so those are things that I have recently put into my frame of things that I want to do in the near future. And this is going to be a little bit taboo, but I'm going to go ahead and share it in terms of, you know, saving money and everything. The retirement situation that I had with my employer, I honestly don't even remember how much money I used to put in there. All I know is that they matched it, right? And so I didn't even check how much money was in that retirement fund until maybe this past summer. And when I checked it, I realized that with the 3 years that I was in my full-time job at a state institution, I had saved less money than I made in my business in 1 year. And for me, I had to really sit back and evaluate that, because you're so caught up in the, you work your 9-to-5, you know, you get what you're given. Going back to your comment about negotiating salaries, right? You take what you're given, and you take a vacation maybe once a year. I don't believe in that. And so for me, realizing that I could literally make more money from my couch than I could saving through my employer for them 9-to-5, I just cashed out on my retirement fund last week to invest in my business so that I can be full time, you know, continue to be full time as we step into a new year.
You know what? The funny thing is, normally in other episodes, I would tell clients, don't do that. Don't take money. But because you took it out to invest in the business, I always tell people, if it's not going to a income producing asset, what are you doing? Like, there's no reason to be doing that. But the fact that you simply transitioned it from saving for you to into your business, which in turn probably will be a better retirement vehicle with you.
Yes.
I am all for that. And that's the way, that's why I always tell people, I don't believe in financial literacy being a one size fit all people. The information is basic and I want to give it to people as much as possible, but everyone's going to have their own tweaks. Everyone's going to have their own strategy because everyone is moving and operating differently based off their overall
And that's something that I'm really excited to talk to my clients about as they're transitioning out of higher education, because a lot of them that I talk to are like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to afford to move off campus, or I don't know how I'm going to be able to afford this field. When firstly, the field doesn't really pay you hardly enough for the work that you're actually doing. But like you said, people have different circumstances. And so I really want to help people create their own blueprint so they can have this exit strategy that's going to make them feel secure and safe. I think one of the main issues that comes up with money that we aren't talking about is like the importance of feeling safe and secure. And so the reason why I am able to leave my 9-to-5 job and focus on my business for the rest of the year is because I was disciplined and I was strategic, and I created enough support and cushion for myself that I feel safe and supported in just doing what is going to be best for me versus listening to everybody else's opinions.
Okay. And the last thing I always like to talk about, because I think it's essential, Black women make more, you know, entrepreneurial businesses or open more businesses than any other segment or social group in America, in the world, actually. What are your experiences like? What's some of your feedback about being a Black woman?
Being a Black woman in business is so empowering because we are raised to be caregivers and nurturers and take care of everyone else. But I think that when you really step into entrepreneurship, it gives you the opportunity to be in control without being judged, without being perceived as bossy, because you're running your own show. And so you get to call the shots for once. You get to have the vision. You get to be the creative director of your dreams. And fortunately, you know, hopefully you're connecting with other Black women who are really feeding that journey and feeding your soul. So for me, I started my business 6 months before my best friend started her business. And I can tell you, she's also a Black woman. It has been so much more of a rewarding experience having her next to me as we grow in our businesses and having someone to go to bounce ideas off of each other. It's really nothing. I really just haven't experienced anything else like it. And I actually went to a conference in Atlanta to see Maya Elias back in February. And the room was filled with 100 Black women entrepreneurs who were all women of faith. And I have never experienced anything like that in my life. So it's been such a great journey.
Okay. That's so the last thing is we usually do, I want you to give your last tidbit of wisdom or any advice that you want to give to the listeners. Also, promote your brand where they can follow you on Instagram, Twitter, whatever social media platforms or websites that you have. We definitely want to use this as a platform to not only disseminate information, but to also
yes. So to anyone who's thinking about starting a side hustle or a business or going full time into entrepreneurship, the number one thing that I would say as advice is to invest in yourself. It's a very feeling the first time you hit that, you know, send button for something that costs in the higher hundreds or in that, you know, $1,000 range. It can be very, very scary because we're not used to investing in ourselves, but you will always really see the reward of investing in yourself. So please do not think that you're going to make it to the top alone. It's going to require a village, but it's also really going to require some strategy and investment. And but again, my name is Nadeja Towns. I'm a career transition coach and exit strategist. And so if you work in higher education or in student affairs, or you know a friend or colleague who is miserable in higher education right now, please welcome them to follow me on social media. My Instagram is Nadeja Towns, simply my first and last name. And I also have a private Facebook group called the Student Affairs Sanctuary. And that's really a safe space for me to help student affairs professionals who are at that crisis and crossroads in their career really figure out how to take the next steps. I recently launched my signature program, Beyond Student Affairs, which is an opportunity for folks to work with me one-on-one over 8 weeks to plan out their entire journey from being burnt out at their student affairs job to really building a new career on their own terms.
That's awesome. Again, I'd like to thank you for coming on. Like, I never take for granted people's time because I know it's precious and people could always be doing things. I don't want to say more productive, but their time could always be spent doing something else. So we definitely appreciate Nadeja coming on, giving you all this information. I specifically like the tackling the student loan debt thing because I'm still one who's still under there. I was one of them people who had I got a couple of bags on me on my neck, but I'm tackling them. I'm tackling them and kind of in the same manner that you're saying, using other vehicles, investing. My method is buying assets.
I love that. Yeah, so I just want to say one more thing too, for you know, because I know a lot of your listeners are focusing on probably paying off debt. When you're creating this budget that you're going to use to pay off the debt, something that's so important is to just be realistic. And I'm sure that you probably talked about this before, but it's 10 times harder. Granted, you're going to have to step away from some luxuries when you prioritize paying off your debt. But it's so important that you are at least saving some of your hard-earned money to do, even if it's the smaller things that bring you some peace and joy, because you don't want to be miserable the entire time. So, you know, it's different for everybody, but figure out what works for you and find a balance that's going to allow you to really make progress with your debt. Feel miserable the entire journey because it might be longer for some than others.
We're gonna have a day on again. I'm not sure. I think with all of the women that have been on so far, I'm gonna have them on again. It'd probably be different subjects or things that you guys might be doing, or where I feel like you could offer some wisdom and all that. But I definitely appreciate you, guys. Again, this was episode 8. I hope this feeds into your spirit. As usual, this has been The Culture's Money.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitos, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.